Nature's Edge is brought to you by the Angler Magazine of Western North Carolina, Western North Carolina's only magazine dedicated to the fishing enthusiast. Pick one up at over 400 locations throughout Western North Carolina or visit them online at theanglermagazine.com to find out more. And be sure to follow them on Facebook, Angler Magazine of Western North Carolina.com.
Hey guys, Dale Stewart here with Nature's Edge. Hope everybody's doing well out there and you're spending some of this great winter weather in the great outdoors. Get out there and walk around. Just bundle up. It's pretty cool here right now, and we're gonna continue to cool down, I think, over the next week or two. But then we're in the middle of winter. One thing I want to talk about a little bit today, and our guest is going to talk a lot about it, is the need for corridors over our interstates and our major highways for animals to cross over. I was driving in my car the other day and over about a 20-mile trip, I saw two or three carcasses of dead deer on the road, and it's not just the animals that are impacted by the traffic out there on the highway. It's the people that hit them as well. We have a number of fatalities every year in this country due to automobiles striking animals, or people just dodging in their automobiles, trying to miss these animals and causing wrecks. Our guest today, Jeff Hunter. Jeff is a senior program manager with the National Park Conservation Association, based in Asheville, North Carolina, his field office. He is an avid backpacker. He's a birder. And I think he thru-hiked the Appalachian Trail, didn't you, Jeff, back in 2000 or so?
Yeah.
He works on projects focused on the Blue Ridge Parkway, the Appalachian National Scenic Trail, the Great Smoky Mountain National Park, and as we were just talking about, the Wildlife Connectivity Project, which we're going to talk about a lot more today. Jeff, welcome to Nature's Edge, and let's just jump in there and tell me a little bit about what you do and what the National Park Conservation Association is all about.
Sure, happy to, Dale. So National Parks Conservation Association has been around for a century. In fact, 2019 is our centennial year. We were founded in 1919 by the first director of the National Park Service, Stephen Mather, who within 3 years of the creation of the park system saw a need for an outside organization to advocate for these places, for a park system. So our mission is to advocate to protect and enhance America's national parks for present and future generations. And how I work to fulfill our mission here in Asheville, where we have a field office, we're headquartered in D.C., 28 offices around the country. I'm working on, as you said, the Smokies, the Parkway, and the AT. And so sometimes it's park defense. It's defending parks from threats, whether it's air quality, water pollution. Sometimes it's working outside boundaries, working beyond the boundaries of the park, like we're doing with this Wildlife Connectivity Project. You know, wildlife don't know where the park boundary is.
No.
They're moving across the landscape, and if you want to actually protect the wildlife inside the park, around the park, you sometimes have to work outside boundaries with partners. And then sometimes we're doing advocacy on a variety of issues like park funding. For instance, there's almost $12 billion worth of stuff in parks that's broke.
Yeah.
Roads that need to be repaved, water systems that don't work, sewage treatment systems that need to be rebuilt. This is what we call deferred maintenance, because Congress has not been appropriating adequate funding for the park system for years. This is not a new issue. So we do a lot of advocacy on things like that, and the Land and Water Conservation Fund. The listeners may not know what that is, but it's a super important pool of funding that's used to conserve land, like along the Blue Ridge Parkway. If there's a threat of a development within the viewshed of the parkway, LWCF funds can come in and acquire that land. And so that's something that that fund has expired. Senator Richard Burr here in the state of North Carolina, that's one of his top legislative priorities, is reauthorizing that fund. So we're advocating for that.
And I know that is extremely important work. I guess, and you also work with the voluntary groups at the parks and the different?
Not so much.
Or is it directly with?
So here's the thing. What we're going to be talking about today with the Wildlife Corridors Project, if somebody tells you they're working on a project like this and they're doing it all themselves, they're not telling you the truth. I mean, the project that I'm working on is a collaborative project. I'm working in partnership with federal, state, tribal organizations, the Eastern Band of Cherokee, and a whole suite of nonprofit organizations. You have to do that on a multi-jurisdictional landscape like we're dealing with, because we have an interstate highway, so Federal Highways Administration is involved. It's Tennessee and North Carolina. We've got two DOTs. We've got two state wildlife agencies. We've got the Forest Service.
Yeah.
We've got the National Park Service. And then we've got all these advocacy groups that work on wildlife issues that are also interested in seeing this, along with the tribe. So,
do you find, Jeff, that each of these groups you just mentioned have their own separate agendas, or do you find that they kind of come together for the good of all?
I think for the most part we come together, and some of these groups have various have different expertise they bring to the table. Like, for instance, Hugh Irwin with the Wilderness Society. I used to work with him with Southern Appalachian Forest Coalition.
Sure.
An organization in Asheville that no longer exists. But Hugh is he's a map maker. You know, he's a conservation planner. He actually was talking about this years ago, almost two decades ago. He was talking about I-40 and how it was an obstacle to wildlife movement between the Smokies and Forest Service lands on the other side of the highway. So it's great to have someone with a real knowledge of the landscape and a knowledge of these issues and who can create great maps for us. So that's just one example.
Yeah, and I know there are many, many others out there. One other thing I wanted to talk to you about just briefly before we get into the connector issue is, I know you were involved and just recently the Tennessee Wilderness Act was signed. And I know you must be happy about that.
I am. That's where I got to work with Hugh, actually. I was I directed the Tennessee Wild Wilderness Campaign from 2008 to 2013, 5.5 years. Got to work side by side with Hugh to try to protect nearly 20,000 acres of the Cherokee National Forest. I left that campaign in 2013 to go out west to California to work. But Lamar Alexander and Senator Corker, two Republican senators from the state of Tennessee, continued to reintroduce that bill Congress after Congress until they could finally get it passed in the Farm Bill just last month, and got to the president's desk. He signed it. It's the law of the land.
And can you just give us a brief summary of what that law is all about?
Sure. So the Wilderness Act is the highest form of protection for public lands. Particularly with our Forest Service lands, which are managed in multiple ways. You could have timber sales, timber harvest. Wilderness precludes any form of development at all. And so what the Tennessee Wilderness Act did is it created the brand new 9,000-acre Upper Bald River Wilderness in Monroe County, Tennessee, a beautiful, incredible watershed.
It is.
And it expanded five existing wilderness areas, the Big Frog and Little Frog wilderness areas in Polk County, Tennessee, the Sampson Mountain Wilderness, which is up here off I-26. As you head from Asheville to Johnson City, you can see that landscape up on the left to the south of the roadway. And then it expanded the Big Laurel Branch Wilderness up above Watauga Lake on Iron Mountain by almost 4,500 acres. That permanently protects 4.5 miles of the Appalachian Trail.
And that's a good thing.
It sure is.
That's a very good thing. All right, let's get into something that's dear to me, and I know it is with you, and that's the wildlife project that connects forest over these interstates and over these main roads. Talk a little about that.
Sure. So it seems like the older I get, the more upset I get about roadkill. I've hit a couple of deer in my lifetime. It's funny. I think it was probably about 14 years ago, the Southern Appalachian Man in the Biosphere, these conferences they used to have in Asheville.
Yes.
I attended one, and I got to put on a panel. And I was talking about a hiking trail system, but someone on my panel was talking about wildlife overpasses and underpasses. And before that day, I didn't know anything about this this technology, how you could actually build a wildlife bridge over a roadway. At that point in time, it was really Europe was way ahead of us, and they still are pretty much ahead of us. But it intrigued me. In talking to Hugh and learning about the mortality that we're seeing on I-40, specifically in the Pigeon River Gorge, if the listeners, this is near the Tennessee-North Carolina state line, sort of between the Maggie Valley exit 20 and the state line in Tennessee, and then moving further west from the state line in Tennessee to where the Foothills Parkway ties into I-40. That's just this side of Newport, Tennessee. That's the area we're looking at. It's a gorge. The roadway was built and opened in 1968. In 1968, picture this now, the bear population was a fraction of what it is now. The bears were not doing well in the late 60s. The bear population is doing quite well now. It's almost reaching carrying capacity in terms of culturally because of the conflicts sometimes we have with folks who don't take care of their trash or what have you, or with road collisions. There were also no elk on the landscape then, and elk were reintroduced in 2001, 2002. So it's a very different situation here in 2019 than it was 51 years ago. And what we find this past year, the acorn crop did not do very well. And so wildlife biologists call this a mast failure, hard mast, any sort of nuts. And this is a big part of a black bear's diet. When the acorns fail, which happens periodically for a variety of reasons, bears have to go farther and wider for their food. They have to cross a lot more roads. So we saw lots of bears hit in the gorge. You know, some days you can actually drive in the gorge. In the fall in particular is when they're moving. You could see 3, 4, 5 bears, you know, killed on a stretch of roadway.
Yeah, absolutely.
And so this gets into, you know, the bears are doing well, but this is both a public safety issue and a wildlife issue. And so we have present circumstances where we have mortality happening. We don't really know how much stuff is getting hit and where it's getting hit, in part because sometimes it gets hit in the roadway, and within a couple hours, it's just a greasy spot in the road. Other times, locals will pick up these carcasses before they can be, you know, counted. The wildlife agencies like to come and pull a tooth from the animal so they can age it and sex it if possible. But folks will pick these carcasses up, or an animal could get hit and it wanders off into the roadway and dies, and you can't see it from the road. So we're trying to get our arms around exactly what is the mortality issue. How many animals are getting hit and killed, and where is that happening? And that's an important part of this research that we're doing now.
And who are your partners in the research? Is it individuals, or is it?
So Wildlands Network has hired a wildlife biologist, Dr. Liz Hillard, and she's working closely with a biologist that I've hired, Steve Goodman. He came to us from Eglin Air Force Base in western Florida, where he'd been studying red-cockaded woodpeckers and gopher tortoise for a number of years. So Liz and Steve are working hand-in-hand in partnership, looking at these mortality issues. Another way we're doing some research is Wildlands Network provided some funding. They partnered with my organization, NPCA, and the North Carolina Wildlife Federation on an elk collar project. And the National Park Service and the North Carolina Wildlife Resource Commission are putting these collars on elk, and it allows us to see where they move across the landscape. And that's a really important part of the puzzle. And we need to know how these animals are colonizing new habitat.
And they are.
Yeah. Dale, one of the issues we have is that in 2015, a cow elk walked under the bridge at Harmon Den and headed over towards Max Patch.
Yes, I was aware of that.
And we now have a small elk herd on that side of the highway, the other side of the highway from the park where they were reintroduced. And so the herd is growing on both sides of the highway. One of the impetuses for this project was the Forest Service announced a timber sale called the 12-Mile Project.
Yes.
In the gorge to expand elk habitat on public lands. Now, that's a good thing, because if we can create new habitat for the elk and keep them on public lands, then they're not going to have conflict with private landowners because the elk will get in people's gardens and knock people's fences down. And locals don't like that, understandably. But when you have a habitat project like that, you know, creating new habitat, myself and our partners at the Rocky Mountain Elk Foundation and Wildlands Network and Defenders of Wildlife, you know, brought up the fact that we need to really think about this, because if we don't do these timber sales and create this habitat in the right area, we could have elk in the roadway.
Sure.
And a bull elk could run 1,000 pounds.
Oh, absolutely. Is the ultimate end result, I mean, are you wanting to build overpass on the interstate?
You know, what we're going to do, we're following the science. We really need to do the research and find out where's the mortality and where is it feasible to design structures. Now, bears will go through culverts,
yeah,
pretty small culverts, readily,
yeah,
as will lots of other smaller mammals. Elk, much larger animal, they're a little more finicky. So as the elk herd grows, you know, overpasses might have to be a solution for them. One thing I want to emphasize is that our focal species are elk, bear, and white-tailed deer, but there are a whole array of species that can benefit from improving connectivity.
Oh, absolutely.
You know, even snakes.
Sure.
Yeah, you name it. Anything that moves across the landscape could benefit by being able to get from one area to another. And with climate change, this is going to become all the more important because wildlife is going to need to move,
yeah,
to seek out new habitat.
And you know, and you mentioned Europe, you know, was kind of ahead of us in that world. But also here in the United States, out west and in the Northwest, they're dealing with this issue as well, and actually building some of these corridors. Are they not?
They are. In May of 2017, I went out to Salt Lake City. There's a biannual conference called the International Conference on Ecology and Transportation. North Carolina State actually coordinated that conference for a number of years. It was in Raleigh a few years back. But this last meeting in 2017 was in Salt Lake City. And we took a field trip up to Wyoming, a place called Trapper's Point. In this spot, for millennia, pronghorn antelope have been migrating about 150 miles from a desert environment where they spend the winter up to near Jackson Hole, Wyoming, where they spend the summer. They can't spend the year round near Jackson because of the snow depths, so they have to migrate. And as that part of Wyoming developed, they needed to build overpasses because it was a slaughterhouse on the roadway. And they built these overpasses that have reduced mortality by over 90%.
And the overpasses they build them kind of in a natural format, don't they? I mean, they have grass on them and shrubbery and different things.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
And what you find is, you know, the mule deer use them.
Yeah.
Mountain lions follow the mule deer herds.
Absolutely.
A lion's diet is primarily deer.
Yep.
So you get lions going across. You get bears going across. In that part of the world, you have grizzlies and black bears. All kinds of critters will use these overpasses.
Just real quick, how are they paid for? How are these overpasses paid for? Do you know? Is it taxpayer dollars, or is it individual, or a combination?
Yes, all of the above. So there are federal dollars for wildlife mitigation available through various funding mechanisms at the federal level. I don't really have my arms around all those funding mechanisms right now because we're not really there.
All right, I understand.
We're trying to see, you know, is this something we need to develop in the Pigeon River Gorge? We've got a lot more information to gather before we can figure out, is this something we can do? And then we can chase some of the funding. But having relationships now with Federal Highways Administration, they came down and just facilitated a two-day workshop for us in Maggie Valley, brought all the stakeholders together, 65 people in one room, putting their heads together and agreeing to work cooperatively. It's a beautiful thing.
Yeah, that's quite a thing. How long, what's the timeline, Jeff, as far as the study goes? Or do you have a timeline on?
So hopefully about a year from now, we're going to have a better understanding of mortality issues. Prior to pulling this collaborative project together, we had a lot of our mortality data siloed. In other words, the Wildlife Commission would have some, the DOT would have some, the Tennessee DOT would have some. And so we're trying to bring all that data together and then look very carefully at overlay those kills on maps and see where are the hot spots. You know, where are the areas where animals are getting hit multiple times? And then really focus in and find out why is that happening. Do we have some natural feature that's funneling wildlife movement down to the highway? And those are the areas where we might end up with a solution on the ground with either an overpass or culverts and fencing, which is an important part of the puzzle to actually funnel animals into these structures.
Jeff, we've got about 2 minutes. How can people learn more about the National Parks Conservation Association and your work? I know you guys have websites and...
Sure. Well, I would encourage them to visit our website, npca.org. We're also on Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, all those social media places. We just actually unveiled our new centennial website yesterday, so there's a lot of information on there. Check it out. We are a member-supported organization. We have 1.3 million members and supporters around the country. We can't do the work that we do without support from the public.
And what about volunteers? Do you use volunteers?
Sometimes. I don't, you know, right now I have interns sometimes from
sure.
Warren Wilson College right up the road.
Right.
In fact, we used Warren Wilson students to advance some of this research. I don't have a need for volunteers at the moment, but if folks want to contact me locally, I'm here in Asheville. Can I give out my email address?
Absolutely.
That would be jhunter@npca.org. Hit me up, folks.
And they will, Jeff. One final question before we have to go, and that's around if someone comes upon an animal hit on the road, a bear, an elk, a deer, or something, who should they contact?
Sure. Well, there was a feature in last Sunday's Asheville Citizen Times, and Karen Chavez, a very fine writer for the paper, encouraged people to contact the Wildlife Resource Commission, North Carolina Wildlife Resource Commission. Those are the folks to contact.
All right, Jeff, I certainly appreciate you being on Nature's Edge today and talking to us about the various projects. They're all needed. They're all excited. This is Dale Stewart and Nature's Edge. We will see you outdoors.
Visit naturesedgemedia.com. You can check out podcasts, videos, lecture archives from Dale, and much more. Thank you for listening to Nature's Edge with Dale Stewart, brought to you by Angler Magazine of Western North Carolina.